You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Right there. First and goal from the 1 yard line and into the end zone for the touchdown goes Zamir White. Good protection. Going for the end zone. Open, making the grab. Trey Tucker for the touchdown. Blitz coming. Pass is reached for and pulled in for the touchdown by Jacoby Myers. Second and 7. Play action. Wide, wide, wide open touchdown. Michael Mayer. Taking the snap will be Brandon Bolden. He'll keep it. He'll run. And he'll run all the way to the end zone. First down from the 20-yard line. O'Connell to the end zone. Touchdown, Raiders. Second and goal. Myers is going to throw. Touchdown. Davante Adams hauls it in. No huddle here. Stick. Looking. Look out from behind. And the ball is out. It's going to be ruled that it's alive and going to the end zone right now for what is ruled a touchdown is John Jenkins. So second down and 13. Oh, baby. Unbelievable. Jack Jones. They do it again. I mean, there are bad dreams and there are crazy bad dreams, and for the Chargers it's been that kind of a night.
It was that kind of a night. 8 touchdowns. We usually don't go so long on the highlights leading in, but we just couldn't choose which of the Raiders 8 touchdowns we wanted to choose. They finish it out 63-21. It was the first game, first team since the 1950 Rams to have 8 different players score a touchdown. We had a 320-plus pound man, John Jenkins, run it in for 44 yards, and that wasn't even the best defensive touchdown of the night. Jack Jones got that. I am Greg Rosenthal. We're going to break down this game a little. We'll talk a little big picture, Chargers, Raiders as well after this, and I will give you my MVP ladder with some great statistical help because I'm going to be helped tonight by Sam Schwartzstein. If you watch Prime Vision on Amazon, you've seen Sam's head just pop up in the corner all night. He's just like a part of the family dinner at our house. Just Sam just popping up. Oh, there he is with some good stats. He is there in Vegas tonight. Sam, welcome. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Greg. And I was, you know, we were talking about it. You talk about the big man touchdown. That was by far my favorite touchdown. I want to know what your favorite touchdown was. But I got to hop in early with some analytics, some lytics, as we call them here. Every time we get a big dog touchdown, a thick six, if you will, shout out to my Golic Jr., we got to know how fast he was moving. He was moving at 14.95 miles per hour. That would have been the fourth fastest by a guy over 320 plus who's pushing more than 3 bills in the fourth fastest in the NGS era since 2016.
Great job bringing the numbers right off the bat. Yeah, I wanted Al to get a little more excited there, but I think from his angle, and I could tell from our angle too, it was like, what happened on that play? Was that actually a touchdown? It was just one of those nights. It was 42-0 at halftime, the second largest shutout or second largest margin, tied for the second largest in the history of the NFL. The only thing that was bigger than that, a game I remember well, Tom Brady in the snow taking it out on Jeff Fisher, who had been honking about Bill Belichick and the Patriots, 45-0 at halftime. I think that was back in 2009. And yet that wasn't the most embarrassing moment in the game. After it was 42-0, the next 3 touchdowns for the Raiders were thrown by Jacoby Myers, ran in by John Jenkins, and then returned by Jack Jones, the former Patriot, who made, to me, one of the most fun plays of the year, reading one of Easton Stick's pass, catching it one-handed, reading it so well that the pass was behind him and going in. And at that moment, Sam, they have 63 points, and we got pretty much the whole fourth quarter to go. And I'm thinking history, that we're going to be talking history. Were you rooting for 73 or more, or were you feeling too bad for the Chargers at that point?
I just wanted to root for Scorigami at that point. I'll be completely honest. We were
you
at
got
Scorigami.
One. You got one.
And we got one. And we got one. So, you know, you always have to have something to root for, you know, whether it's the spread or the over. Everything's already hit. You got to root for something. And so Scorigami is what we were rooting for at the end of the game.
I mean, I would assume once you get over 63, most everything's a Scorigami.
66-14 had happened before. So.
Okay.
You know, we were nervous. We were nervous. If team wanted to settle for a field goal, we were nervous.
Yeah, I wanted it because I did feel for Brandon Staley, and we'll get to him quickly. But let's, before we just kind of move to bigger picture stuff and some more fun stuff, I do want to give Raiders credit. You know, they've played with Antonio Pierce now for 6 weeks. They're 3-3. Their defensive numbers are good. I think they're giving up something like 15, 16 points a game now with Antonio Pierce. So he's a defensive coach. They've had some good defensive games for the most part. They're 3-3. They kept going after it in this game. They were throwing, nothing crazy, but they were throwing with the lead, which I think that's respecting your opponent. To me, it's fine. You don't need to just lay down. But I think he knows, hey, look, I have four games. If I do something historical, if I'm showing Mark Davis on national television what I can do, him and Champ Kelly, their interim GM, are fighting to try to stay there. And I think they have a chance. I don't pretend that I have inside information on this, but I think Mark Davis said publicly, I'm going to give these guys a chance. I'm going to make an evaluation from everything they do. If they've had six games, they still have three fairly difficult games left. But if they happen to play well in those three games, maybe beat the Chiefs, you go 2-1, something like that, I think they'll have a chance. So I do think there is some meaning, bigger picture, to take out of this game, other than it was just a fun night in Vegas.
Yeah, and you talked about passing throughout the game. In that two, when it was a two possession game at the start, there was a plus 9.2% pass rate over expected. That's a next gen stats metric looking at on every down and distance, where all the players line up, do we expect the team to pass or not? And so that was one of the highest ones of the season at that point. So
wait,
was
like the whole game, or at what point in the game? What do you
starting
mean?
Starting in a two possession game.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was where it's like it really started to kind of show, like, hey, is this guy taking the foot off the gas? It's kind of getting out of hand already. It was the first quarter. And so when we're looking at pass rate over expected, it's like, yeah, most teams in similar scenarios would not have passed. And he's 10%, nearly 10% higher. So, you know, I think both this team is a unique team, right? You know, Aiden O'Connell, fourth round pick, not what really, you know, the guy you'd expect to take you to the next level. Everyone got the when they got blanked last week by Brian Flores. People don't realize Brian Flores and the Vikings is really the most unique defense in the NFL right now. Either cover zero or drop eight. So that's really hard for young quarterbacks to take advantage of, especially if you can't run the ball. So good game for them. I don't think, as much as last game didn't tell us who this coaching staff was, this game also doesn't tell us who this coaching staff was. I'm not going to say, you know, maybe they're somewhere in the middle. They're definitely not either team that we've seen so far in the past 2 weeks.
No, but I love the response. It's Aiden O'Connell. You know, you mentioned mid-round rookie. I think it's acquitted himself well overall. He looks like he's going to have a career. Been better than average, I would say, for a rookie quarterback, and he's a mid-round guy. 248 yards, four touchdowns, 20 for 34. But Pierce was asked by, you know, your colleague, Kaylee Hartung, out of halftime, what's the attitude here? And he said, like, to not let your foot off the pedal. And I love that. To me, that's very Raiders. That's something Mark Davis will appreciate. That's something Al Davis will appreciate. And the crowd was appreciating it. I mean, it's the most expensive seat in sports for 2-5-8 teams put on a show. They were booing Antonio Pierce when they didn't go for it on fourth and short in the second half, which I loved. He did not. He punted a couple times on fourth and short. So he did not get carried away. But I love it. I think, look, these guys are evaluated on statistics. Everyone is playing for their next contract, not just the coaches, but Devontae Adams wants to have a nice night, a big night for once. He gets 101, eight catches. Zamir White's making one of his, maybe his first career start, certainly the most he's been used in a long time. Everyone wants the ball out. Jack Jones trying to keep his career going. Everyone wants the ball out. What are you going to do? Stop playing. I don't think Brandon Staley, who surprisingly talked to Kaylee Hartung going into halftime. I give him some credit for that, and wasn't giving away anything emotionally on the sideline. I don't think he would mind. And people, I saw it on Twitter, so that's what I'm reacting to. Like, people need to calm down with Antonio Pierce somehow breaking some sort of code. Give me a break.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes both ways, though. I would not have been a surprise if Brandon Staley went cover zero the entire rest of the game as well, right? And
sure.
Said, you're
sure.
Like, and that's like that. The code is that you have a choice and I have a choice. When you do a double pass, what I loved is that they installed one double pass this game and they just ran the same one twice. That's like, you know, like, but they did a different over motion on it, so that was probably like a sideline thing.
Well, it
like,
worked the first time. I know it was just two for two for 12 yards, but he got the touchdown on it. Jacoby Myers, perfect. Well, not quite perfect passer rating, but pretty nice tonight. Do you do NGS numbers on, like, Jacoby Myers as a passer?
I didn't. That's me showing how unprepared I am for postgame with you.
I we'll move kind of to the bigger picture stuff soon, and I do want to get into your role and everything, because it is very fascinating to me. I really do enjoy, and maybe that's why your producer reached out. I don't know. I've been talking up watching it this way. To me, just the coach's film alone, getting to watch a game like that is beautiful, but all the things Amazon does to supplement that really helps, especially the names and the circles and everything. I do want to shout out Malcolm Kuntz, who was awesome in this game, was crushing one of the best healthy players the Chargers have left. You know, they were kind of a mash unit, not many healthy players. He was awesome rushing the passer, beat Rashawn Slater a number of times. I don't know what he ended up with quarterback hits, but two sacks. He had that forced fumble, and he was crushing it, and he was a big reason why they lost. And look, the defense, there was a couple fumbles early by the Chargers, special teams and on offense, and Raiders converted it early. But the Chargers defense, to me, was a big part of this story in the first half of this game. And you know, the conversation coming out of it will be whether Brandon Staley keeps his job through this weekend, because I think we know he's very likely to lose it after the end of the season. And I just kind of look back on him and his run, because when he came in, he was a little bit of an analytics darling in just that he was so aggressive. I thought he somehow lost the plot sometimes. That he went for it so much and then he pulled back so much. And sometimes he seemed to be reacting to what the public was saying, and that's always dangerous. But the thing that I always come back to with him, and I'm sure he knows this in his heart once he has time to look back on it, was he's a defensive coach and the defense just was never good enough. And his 3 years as Chargers coach, I don't know if you like don't like me using DVOA. Are they like a rival?
DVOA.
Okay.
I love Aaron Schatz. I don't know. Yeah, I love DVOA.
Some in the analytics game, they don't like each other. There's different beefs. It's a tough, the streets are tough. There's also friendships out there too.
I am one of those people in the analytics world, especially because I come from a football background, that any number that will help us get better explaining football to people, that's what I'm a fan of.
Yes, and he's been doing
that's all you should. And Aaron's an amazing job, and the results are there. You're one of the best predictors you can get on an individual player basis. It's a great stat.
Right, and they've been doing it for so long. And I was going to mention Chargers defense. Under Staley, 26th in 2021, 21st last year, and coming into this game, they were 27th. Obviously, Herbert, you know, kind of peaked, I would say, in terms of his production, his efficiency, his everything in 2021, and his numbers kind of have gone down the last couple of years. So that's the most important thing, is to develop your guy. And so I'm giving a little bit of a retrospective, Sam, just because there's a decent chance he might not have his job by the time we tape next, and we're going to be just recapping games on Sunday. It'll be kind of an afterthought then. So tonight put me in a little bit of a reflective mood looking back on the Staley era.
Yeah, to start on tonight, one of the stats we didn't get to bring in to the game, but you know, to me it was a beautiful night of rudimentary football, getting down to the brass tacks on it. And what I mean by that is what the Raiders' game plan was to attack Mike Davis, the cornerback for the Chargers. And you know, when you're watching film, getting ready for a game, it's about finding the fish, right? Who's the weak link, and how do we take advantage of them? It's not always, hey, we have the best concepts, look at all these unique plays. It was, where's Mike Davis? And Mike Davis is not hard to find, even though they're trying to hide him. He plays into the boundary more than, or in the 80% of the time, or nearly 80% of the time, he's in the boundary. And you put a guy there because he can't cover the whole field. and they still attacked him. He still has the most touchdowns over. He has 6 touchdowns on him when targeted over 10 air yards. He had 2 tonight. You know, they knew Trey Tucker with his speed. They were going to attack him there. It was seriously a very simple game plan. Third down, go to Mayer. Big play, find Mike Davis. And I love when football can be like that and you can make it easy. And like you said, analytically, he seemed like a darling, but he was mostly going off vibes. You know, I'm going to be completely honest.
Explain that.
So in game, they have an analytics expert on their staff that is helping coach make decisions and he's guiding them. But they don't have access to the same data that you or I will see on Twitter or that I have access to with a Next Gen Stats decision guide. So the in-game, they're printing out a book that has the possible scenarios they might run into. Analytics expert is giving a recommendation, and then it's up to the coach. And so when you look at the Next Gen Stats decision guide, which has live data, now we don't know what their game plan is, so I don't have game plan data for them. But when you look at the Next Gen Stats decision guide, it is as robust as can be on giving the right recommendations. And Brandon Staley has lost more win probability on situations to go for it when he chooses
being
to go
too
for
aggressive,
it with
essentially.
The model.
Yeah,
exactly. Thank you. So he's being too aggressive. And so when you say, "Oh, is he really following analytics?" He's not. He's just kind of going on vibes. Whether it was the first game or his first season, he had a defense he didn't trust. Then he spent $109 million on defense with Khalil Mack. And he goes, oh, okay, now I have to trust my defense. And so he just kind of waffles and goes off of vibes in those moments, not really focusing on being as analytically savvy as it might have seemed in the first year.
Yeah, it's a shame because they've had great players, but Bosa hasn't been able to stay on the field. Derwin James, for whatever reason this year, maybe it's just usage. Often they're using him kind of as a single high guy, and that's not really his strength. Hasn't been as impactful this season, and I just think, you know, the couple moments before we move on from the Chargers, because again, I'm just anticipating what may happen here. You know, the 27-0 loss last year was concerning, but to me, Staley's responses to questions about that loss this season were almost more concerning. Like he was just feeling it. He was tight, and I just think back to that last game of the regular season, I guess that would have been in 21, when Justin Herbert's just at that point playing as well as he's ever played as a pro, playing out of his mind, playing one of the best games I can think of that a quarterback could play that year. He got an MVP vote or two, or maybe it was just one vote that year.
I think it was mine.
Yeah, and they still lose. They still lose because they can't stop Derek Carr in the Raiders, and that defense can't get one stop late in that game, so it ends up just being a great shootout. And they don't get rewarded for it. So we got to get you an MVP vote. Do you really have one? That would be
amazing. No, I don't. I don't, but I would. I think the guy is special. I think he does a lot of fun stuff on the field and the way he fights through injuries.
I know. And he probably will be starting over unless they wanted to get really crazy and go to Kellen Moore as the head coach or maybe the interim head coach. Who knows? I see a lot of Bill Belichick stuff out there. I would not hold your breath on that.
No. Like, I think you have to. What people have to see is that this is not fantasy football where everyone's treated equal. Like, you know, when one of the things I used to say about Brandon Staley, why he went for it so much on fourth down was his first year, he had a 4-year deal. It's very hard to get fired in your first year because having run a football league before, you don't have in the budget double paying the head coach. You just, it's not a thing that you account for when going forward. So I think, you know, paying the money that Belichick will demand in, I think that's something that the Chargers aren't going to do.
Right. And I look at it too as just Belichick famously said about Woody Johnson in a book or was quoted source was, I'm not going to work for that bleeping guy when he ended up, you know, retiring five days after he was hired or 2 days after whatever it was. And I just think you look at the situation, Tom Telesco, the GM, will he be there? Will he won't? Belichick's one going to have all the power, and there's a certain amount of ego that's involved, a certain amount of it. Like, who would even want to take him on? And to me, the Chargers are just not the ownership, or if Telesco's there as the GM, someone that's going to want to take him on. We do have a quote from Brandon Staley after this game. I'm just going to read for you quickly. He said, games like this happen in the NFL to every coach that's ever coached in this league. You can look at any great coach that's ever coached in the league. Sometimes games like this happen. I don't need to retrace history, but it's part of sports. Sometimes there are games where it doesn't go right. None of it. You have to put it behind you. You got to move on to the next thing. It's philosophical. It's even true, but it's not what any Chargers fan, or I suspect Dean Spanos, is going to want to hear tonight. Let's talk something more fun. Let's get out of tonight.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You broke out a stat between the third and the fourth quarter. I mean, breaking news. It was called QBDI. Explain this stat for me.
Yeah, so QB difficulty index, and we call it QBDI for short. It kind of set out, it was like a little bit of a pipe dream. You know, we have a great team at Amazon of the things that we can kind of create, but we have so many different metrics, whether they're composites or machine learning metrics like EPA per dropback or different things that can measure the performance of a quarterback. And like, none of them are, everyone set picks and choose which is one they want to use. Passer rating, NGS passing score, you know, passer rating, NGS, they don't have sacks. QBR, that has sacks, but we don't know exactly how it's made, right?
Completion all these percentage things, over expected.
Right, like there's a bunch of different things that measure the performance. So we thought, well, let's measure the world around the quarterback and see if we can create a level playing field saying this quarterback has a more difficult time than this one. And so then we can then look at that as a baseline and say, okay, now we're trying to compare it. And what's great about this stat this year is, or this is something we thought of last year in one of our games, and now this, the conversation about MVP is all about Brock Purdy's life is so easy. He's got the mm-hmm. easiest game plan. Everything's made easy for him. And QBDI is trained on expert annotations, myself, other NFL players that have done this, that kind of know football, annotating which plays are most easy for a quarterback to complete. Hmm. And we take that, we run some machine learning on it. We have some, you know, stack rank metrics that we're applying to things that the quarterback doesn't typically control. And then it spits out a number. And so it has a pretty high agreeance with how experts annotate plays. Can't give the exact number, but it's very high where the model agrees with the experts. So we feel confident that the numbers that we're able to give out correctly identify which quarterbacks have the most difficult games and which quarterbacks have the easiest.
Yeah, and to give our listeners some background, I do know you are a former player. You used to play offensive line at Stanford with Andrew Luck, and I'm sure that's all going into it. I am curious, what does it take into account? It takes account how easy the pass is, scheme. Does it take in like opponent into account?
So I got to put this the right way. The thing about machine learning is it's not, you can't always pick out what components are taking place, right? So even when you see on Prime Vision, if you're a Prime Vision watcher, we have defensive alert when it's giving out a recommendation of this player is likely to blitz or not. I can't go in and say, this is the moment, here's the component they're telling it. What we're able to do is every single player in the NFL is tracking chips in their shoulder pads, in the ball, we have a frame of the field, a web of the field, and we're tracking those player movements. And then we annotate plays off of identifying these plays are more difficult than these plays, and we stack rank different plays, and then the model trains off that information.
Hmm.
So I can't.
So when you're starting it out, are you sort of starting it out like that it's more difficult because the defense is playing well? I'm just curious if it's including the defense at all in that.
The way the model works.
As a dork, I'm curious.
Yeah, no. You're talking to the biggest football dork. Come on. the way we view it is it identifies how easy the game plan is, which we saw tonight for Easton Stick. Screen passes, easy throws.
Right.
Get the ball out quick. We know that is involved in it. We're able to match that up. We're able to then also see, is the offensive line blocking correctly? Is this quarterback being pressured a lot?
Right.
We've seen that plays with pressure have higher difficulties. Very easy. And then we have a stat that we co-developed with Next Gen Stats called Prime Targets, which is identifying players that are open or likely to convert a first down if they caught the ball in that moment. If you're watching the broadcast, these are the players that light up green with a green orb. Because we're measuring not just who the quarterback throws to, but is any other player on the field open?
Mm.
So we've seen, the more prime targets, the easier the play is. And so there's different metrics that go into it. but all the player tracking data is also being measured on top of it. So we're able to confidently say that, you know, if the coordinator, your offensive line, your skill position players are doing their jobs, then you're going to have an easier game.
Right.
There's also a way that quarterbacks can be unique is if you're a quarterback that your coach calls quick game and you do not throw that quick game pass, mm-hmm. you're going to have a difficult game. So that's the only way the quarterback really is controlling how difficult their game is. Mm. And we've seen quarterbacks do that where they're just going to hold on to the ball and try and hero ball a lot. That game makes the play more difficult. Guys like Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, who we see do hero ball things, they're not doing it on the quick passes.
Right. They're doing it on the right passes. And yeah, I saw you mentioned Easton Stick had a, you know, I guess it would be a high score there in terms of it was easy.
It was easy. So the lower the number, the easier the score. So we scale everything from 1 to 10. He would have hit a little bit above a 3, which would have been one of the easier games this year.
To be fair, Easton Stick, not an embarrassment tonight, despite the fact that they had like no points throughout the game. He actually ended up with 257 and 3 touchdowns. And even early when I know there was a fumble and he wasn't looking great to me, didn't do the bad. Congratulations to all the fantasy owners, by the way, who had the guts to play Aiden O'Connell or Easton Stick, 4 touchdowns for O'Connell, or Zamir White, nice night, or Josh Palmer got the long touchdown. It's like, if you had the stones to do any of that, this actually ended up being a score fest. Let's use your new stat to break down my MVP ladder. We actually haven't done this on the show. We've talked like Dak, Purdy, but it's just kind of in general conversations. I hadn't thought to sit down and do it. I used to always write this as a weekly column at the end of the season. I just want to throw Patrick Mahomes in as like a honorable mention because really he's playing outstanding despite everything that's happening around him. But I wrote down 6 names. Because I could not bear to not include Josh Allen as my number 6. I actually think there's a chance he finishes this season completely on fire and is playing as high a level this season as just about anyone, and that could get into people's minds for the MVP. Tied for 4th and 5th, I have the two 49ers. Kyle Shanahan said he did not want to pick between Christian McCaffrey and Brock Purdy. And I'm not going to either. I'm going to give some reasons for that, but I am curious how Purdy and this group matches up with your numbers in terms of the new stat you came up with.
Which guys did you want to know first on the difficulty range?
Let's go Purdy, but you can just tell me kind of compared to the rest of the field, and I'll run through the rest of mine later. Like, how does Purdy rate out here?
Yeah, Purdy would be in the upper third, right at the edge of easiest quarterbacks. He's at a 4.96. Tua is the lowest at 3.91, right? And a large part of what we're seeing with Tua is the quick game, and those guys are getting open, and he's not really diverting off the quick game quite a bit. And he's throwing behind the line of scrimmage, you know, over 100% of his yards not over 100%, that's just Raheem Mostert. Inside the red zone, 90%+ of his yards are yak. Right. So easy plays or screen plays are easy plays. And so we're seeing a lot of that from him. But Brock Purdy, his offensive line isn't blocking as well as some of the other offensive lines out there. And so when you're looking at how difficult it is, that's part of it. Now, is it making it easier for him because there are open receivers quite a bit? Absolutely. Is he being called upon to play as much as to pass as much as some of the other guys? Not as much. So we're seeing that on total difficulty plays, he's not seeing as many difficult plays, but he's still able to operate within those plays. And, you know, in the Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott as the two leading favorites the betting favorites right now, they're right around each other. They're in the exact same territory. So those guys.
Where's Lamar?
Lamar, let me look at the list. He's one of the more difficult ones because he's running around quite a bit. Yeah, probably one of the highest guys in the NFL, the eligible players. So looking at our list right now, Lamar is up there. So if you're looking for Lamar as your MVP, this is the stat to help back up your MVP.
Well, you can just, you know, put his rushing numbers in there too and his rushing QBR value. I have Lamar number 3 right now. And before 49ers fans go crazy that I would have, you know, Purdy 4th or 5th, a lot of it, first of all, it is some eye test in evaluating like how well this player is playing relative. But having someone in the top 5 MVP, and for me that would be the top 3 quarterbacks, is saying he is playing at an exceptionally high level. I just like the other people playing at an exceptionally high level. like a little more. And a big part of that is what you mentioned, which is opportunity. He has less than about 100 less dropbacks than Dak Prescott. That's like 2 to 3 games for Brock Purdy. So when I think about that, they are asking Dak Prescott to do more, which they clearly are. He essentially runs the offense himself. He's changing all the plays. He's changing the protection. He has so much more on his plate. It's just a fact. And then you're also adding that just volume wise, him and Lamar and some other quarterbacks have such a higher number of dropbacks. Lamar obviously has the running game. So that's why I'm giving like a slight edge. I have Lamar 3. Tyreek Hill 2, because to me his value, what he's doing is just special at his position compared to maybe what any quarterback season is having. If he can get over 2,000, I give him a chance. And then Dak would be my number 1. Where would you lean at this point in the season?
Look, I have a tough time breaking the trend of EPA per dropback deciding who our MVP is going to be. It's done a pretty good job over the years. Both not and
I know, but that's
EPA.
But
and
that's looking back. Like, isn't that a team? Not to jump in. Sorry. Isn't that to me?
Yeah,
EPA per dropback a little bit of a team stat more than a quarterback stat.
Oh, it's a holistic stat. Absolutely, quarterbacks. But you can't argue that quarterbacks don't have the most impact. And then for the past 7 years, I think going back to Cam Newton, the EPA per dropback leader has won the MVP. So right. It passes the eyeball test in terms of quarterback performance. And then I'll tell you this is probably my favorite reasoning on why Brock Purdy should win it. When Kyle Shanahan was asked preseason 2 years ago if Jimmy Garoppolo was the starter, he said, "I don't know if we're all going to be alive tomorrow. How can I tell you that?" And then he was asked this year if Brock Purdy was the starter coming off of a UCL tear. He said Brock Purdy would have to melt off the face of the earth for him not to be the starter. So in terms of we're all saying that Kyle Shanahan's the guru, the greatest. How does he view this quarterback compared to the ones he's had in the past? I don't know. So should we take Matt Ryan's MVP away from him? Right? Because
no.
He also led the league in MVP. Okay. And so that's where I look at for Brock Purdy. Now, if you're asking me would I trade Brock Purdy for Patrick Mahomes if I were the Niners?
Yeah.
You know, I think I might take Patrick Mahomes on my team more. It's just, you know, it's hard to separate out the teams and the situations. And then probably my last tongue-in-cheek reason for Brock Purdy, he's the 81st highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So when you talk about value you're getting for performance, point per dollar greater. So if we're going to go semantics on MVP, he is definitely the most valuable quarterback in the NFL.
That is a completely fair point and would be a fun column, like the most valuable players in the NFL, like relative to how much money they're making, and he would run away with that. I hear everything you're saying, but I think like multiple things can be true. I think Matt Ryan that year, for instance, was so far ahead of the pack and was so exceptional in every way that it's okay to in that year that he made sense for that award and to look around the league right now. And again, the volume thing really does matter a lot to me personally. And I think Dak and Lamar are having exceptional seasons, but I'm kind of splitting nits. And I also would say like 4 weeks is an exceptionally long time in an MVP race. A lot of times what you think with 4 weeks to go, it completely changes. And for me, having Purdy third among quarterbacks, it's like three among great quarterbacks having great seasons, and there's very little difference between them. And I'm very open-minded to seeing kind of how this goes. But I think it's okay to break from what voters do in the past, too. People say, like, well, you know, Tyreek, you can't consider that because they haven't done it in the past. Like, why do we have to be slaves to what is often an unthinking process for a lot of the voters? Because I know some of their thought processes, and they're just like asking the assistants at the place they work at to do it for them. We can break from the EPA has to be the choice. That's
we absolutely can. I think it's a little bit of a tough pill to swallow when all of a sudden for Brock Purdy, it struggles. Like, we don't have many non first round pick MVPs. I think it's Tom Brady. Did Tom Brady win MVP?
Yes.
And then you have Rich Gannon, right, was the last after that. So we have a little first-round pick bias, so Dak Prescott doesn't follow that. But I think that could be a little bit of it too. So look, and I know the Brock Purdy stuff. If you really want to get me started on someone, it's probably Josh Allen, but I think you have to make the playoffs and they're still outside looking in. So Josh Allen probably does more for his team than anyone right now.
I'm kind of with you on that. And that's a good point. Dak Prescott, fourth round pick, Tyreek Hill, fifth round pick, Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant. So, it's not all about the draft. Sam, I would love to dive deep into all things Prime Vision, but I want to get you out of there before it gets too late. I appreciate you joining me. And look, if you're an overseas listener and you don't get Prime, I feel bad for you. But if you're here, because we do have a lot of listeners overseas, if you're in the States and you haven't been checking out, just hit that down button on the main broadcast. And it really does change. I wish it was an option, but maybe it's just nice as a once a week kind of like dessert or something like that. Watching the coaches film and everything that goes on with the Prime Vision live is a much different experience than when you've tried to watch coaches film or if you've watched coaches film like after the fact and on Game Pass or on NFL Plus or anything. It really is a fun, different way. It's like being there, and it's been fun, and you've added a lot to the broadcast this year. Appreciate you, Sam.
Thanks so much. Yeah, now you have my number. You have Alex Strand's number. You have their information, so you have ideas. You want to see something during the game, you send it over.
Oh, my son's got lots of ideas. He is hooked on Prime Vision, so he loves it too. So I will be bugging you with that, and our listeners, we will be bugging you again on Sunday, the recap show. Will be live. Wow, week 15. 16 games. We'll hit all the Saturday games on Sunday night. Until then, for Sam Schwartzstein, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.